Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com.
Hard to retain employees at a workplace that expects to get dismantled. Scientists are already leaving NCAR, the federal weather lab in Boulder. Court documents say employees are headed for the exits following the Trump administration's promises to dismantle NCAR. Our Spencer Soischer was in court today, where a nonprofit is suing to stop what it says is illegal retaliation against this state.
This federal lab in Boulder is at the forefront of weather science, powering the hurricane forecasts, wildfire models, and severe storm warnings that keep Americans safe. So why would convicted Mesa County Clerk Tina Peters be the reason for the destruction of this place? That was argued in this federal courtroom Thursday. UCAR, the Boulder nonprofit that manages the lab, is suing to block the federal government from transferring NCAR's supercomputer center to the University of Wyoming. UCAR alleges NCAR is under attack in the first place, in part because President Donald Trump has it out for Colorado. UCAR's lawyers laid out a timeline of revenge. On August 21st, the president wrote on Truth Social, "Let Tina Peters out of jail right now. If she's not released, I'm going to take harsh measures." And he took issue with Colorado's mail-in voting. 12 days later, Trump moved Space Command out of Colorado Springs.
The problem I have with Colorado, one of the big problems, they do mail-in voting.
In early December, Trump demanded her release again, called Democrat Governor Jared Polis a sleazebag, and then issued a meritless pardon. Less than a week later, the White House announced it was breaking up NCAR. In February, the lawsuit says the National Science Foundation sent NCAR's director multiple letters saying it was transferring NCAR's supercomputer center away. But the lawsuit says the decision was made illegally before the public could weigh in and before NCAR was given a chance to respond. The Department of Justice argued in court Thursday there was no final decision yet, so there were no processes that were bypassed. And even if Colorado was being targeted, NCAR is not the state of Colorado. Now a judge will decide if he'll block the breakup until the lawsuit plays out. The judge also noted in court today that the government documents suggest two other possible motives here: NCAR's climate change research and its DEI programs. Judge R. Brooke Jackson says he will issue a written decision on whether to issue an injunction, quote, as promptly as possible, and I just looked, hasn't happened yet.
That would be incredibly prompt. I try to avoid harm whenever possible, but especially that irreparable harm that they talk about in court. That's the real bad stuff.
A lot of irreparable harm. They say that they're losing scientists already, and the government's response to that is, well, they were leaving before they should have. That was premature. This wasn't a final decision. Why are they already leaving? Have you seen the letters?
Right. Yeah. No, the letters were pretty clear that that place was in deep, deep trouble. Spencer, thank you. I want to bring in 9 News meteorologist Chris Bianchi now to talk about what does this practically mean, right? I mean, obviously, it's jobs here in our community, but in terms of the work that that lab does to keep us safe and informed.
Yeah. And Kyle, want to give you an idea about that. So is this something that actually affects your weather forecast or not? So what NCAR is, just in a general basis, it's the backbone of atmospheric and climate research. But of course, you just heard about not only the backbone of atmospheric research, but also the supercomputer that's up in Cheyenne, Wyoming. I'll give you a little background here. When I come into work and I sit down and look at some of the computer forecast models, two of those key models, the short range model and the American GFS model, those are two of the probably four or five main models I'm looking at on a daily basis. Two of those are, the data from that is stored up in Cheyenne, Wyoming at that supercomputer. So this is stuff I'm using on a daily basis to tell you whether or not it's going to rain or snow. And I want to kind of emphasize the thing here at the bottom. This is something that actually affects the quality of weather forecasts. You get rid of NCAR or it gets dismantled or anything like that, not only are we going to decrease the quality of those forecasts, but future research into things like climate change, how it's affecting our weather, all that is going to go down out the window, unfortunately, if this gets dismantled. This would be a really bad thing and would affect, again, how your weather forecasts come to be.
Breaking it down, that level of detail. Thank you, Chris. The man who carried out the anti-Semitic firebombing attack on Boulder's Pearl Street Mall was sentenced to life in prison today after pleading guilty to more than 100 state charges, including murder. Mohammed Soleiman pleaded guilty to 101 charges related to that attack last June. He was the man who threw Molotov cocktails at a group gathered in support of Israeli hostages captured by Hamas. One woman there, 82-year-old Karen Diamond, was killed. More than a dozen others were injured. Today, some of the survivors face Soleiman in court, describing the pain they felt that day and the trauma and fear they feel to this day.
I will never forget the immense heat from the flames of the Molotov cocktail on my back. When I'm alone and close my eyes, I can vividly see Karen's body in flames as I bend over, fruitlessly trying to stamp them out. And just as I think they are, they somehow rekindle. Each time I pass a gas station, that stench of gasoline is a reminder of the singed nose hairs and the burnt flesh from that day.
Soleiman also addressed the court through a translator, claiming that his attack was not driven by anti-Semitism, hatred of Jews, but by opposition to the state of Israel. The judge rejected that, saying that Soleiman had specifically targeted the Jewish community. She handed down the maximum sentence, life in prison without parole, plus roughly 2,000 additional years. Soleiman also faces federal charges, which could carry the death penalty. In court, he asked the state for the death penalty, which does not exist in Colorado. He said it would be the only way to offer justice to Karen Diamond, the woman he killed. If you drive Weld County Road 49, there's a decent chance you've got a ticket to prove it. Our consumer investigator Steve Steger got a bunch of tickets refunded in Kersey, and now Steve's buried in complaints out of Hudson, where the locals say the speed camera popped up with no warning. It's required by state law. Sounds like a case for the man they call Steve on Your Side.
I looked all over for where I was speeding at.
It was a camera no one seemed to know about and no one could seem to find.
I couldn't find any camera taking pictures.
But guess what? We found it, thanks to a newly posted Google Street View on County Road 49 in Hudson. Hudson's police chief told Steve on Your Side they put this trailer out on the northbound side of the road for 3 weeks, then took it out. And he told the town council it was pretty profitable during those 3 weeks.
The northbound camera right now that we just installed 3 weeks ago was like 1,000 a day.
1,000 tickets a day is a lot when you consider how many cars drive that stretch daily.
I have about 5,500 cars a day that travel that road. And so 1/5 of those drivers are getting tickets right now.
Based on our measurements, that camera was about a football field away from this 55 mile per hour sign, but it was sitting in a 40 mile per hour zone. The only notice you get about it being 40 miles an hour is a sign a third of a mile back.
Our bill up to now, just since it's been installed, is over $200.
A lot of people who drive that stretch daily say they had no idea that camera was there.
So far, we have in our household accrued $240 in tickets. This is like with me being really careful.
And they should have.
There's supposed to be a 30-day warning period where warnings are issued to drivers rather than tickets. We didn't receive any of those.
She's right. State law requires a warning period for new camera systems and public notice for each new system on the town's website. We've asked the chief about that. He hasn't yet responded to us.
Can you provide specific dates of when that 30-day warning period started before that trailer started issuing tickets?
Luckily, we got our hands on this mid-April meeting where a council member asked the question for us.
Well, that 30-day warning period started in 24 when we started that safety corridor.
You heard that right. 2024, a year and a half before that trailer parked on the northbound side of the road. The chief says the town considers the warning period for the camera placed on the other side in 2024 to be the warning for this new camera in 2026. Defense attorney Jeremy Lowe says that's not exactly what the law says.
It says with every new system, there needs to be a new warning period. This is not the same camera system. This isn't even in the same location.
Lowe says anyone who got a ticket should fight it and argue you should have gotten a warning.
And the camera was only up for 3 weeks, right? And so none of the tickets should be anything but warnings at this point.
The amount of tickets, too, that's huge.
Meantime, at last night's meeting, the town council seemed to admit something doesn't seem right.
We wouldn't have Channel 9 News out there if it was nothing. There's a problem, and we need to get to it. And if it was our fault or whatever, we need to review it and see what was going on.
So I'm no math expert, but 1,000 tickets a day for 21 days, $40 a pop, $840,000. Now, I don't know if that's the real number because we've asked for it and we've been told that Hudson doesn't have responsive records for how many tickets were written. But I'm guessing those dispute hearings are going to be pretty busy. By the way, a bill just passed out of the state Senate that would require municipalities to actually mail warnings during their warning period. It's now working through the House with a committee hearing tomorrow, Kyle. And I did get a response, by the way. I got a response this afternoon, just late this afternoon, from the town manager, who says that the word system, they feel, is defined, or that they say state law defines it as more than just one piece of equipment, more than just a camera. It's the whole system, writing tickets. And so they feel that that system has been in place on that roadway for that long, so they didn't need to re-trigger the 30-day warning period. But they did say that the town council indicated they'd like to change their law and start to issue a 30-day warning period whenever they put a new camera up.
If they want people to slow down, warning one in five drivers would certainly get people to slow down. Or maybe they just want sweet, sweet American cash.
I mean, yeah, it's quite a bit.
Steve Sager, thank you. Mm-hmm. Don't let yesterday's snow fool you. Cities across Colorado are still in drought and taking new steps to reduce people's water use. State legislators have decided to take big issues down to the wire at the Capitol this year, including a decision on some murder charges. That's next. Add Frisco to the list of communities in Colorado with mandatory water restrictions. As of tomorrow, people there will only be able to water lawns twice a week and only between 6 and 9 p.m. Town says its watershed got about half of its average snowfall. They're reassuring folks this is just precautionary. They don't think it's an emergency in Frisco. They don't think the town's drinking water is at risk. The restrictions means that businesses can only serve water to customers if they ask for it. Well, if this is what suffices for good news in the drought picture, Crispy, you're telling me that that a couple percentage points of our state no longer in drought?
3% of the state, Kyle, not one, not two, but 3% of Colorado is now drought-free. Yay. Yeah, we went from 100% of the state in drought to 97%. A little splotch here of El Paso County and Colorado Springs on down to Pueblo. Worth noting, though, on a more serious note, that this does not reflect all the rain and the snow that we picked up last week. The drought monitor is released every Thursday, but it goes through the previous Tuesday morning's precipitation. That makes sense. It's released on Thursday, but it only counts the stuff through the previous Tuesday morning. So this does not count the stuff last week. There will be some substantial improvement in next week's update. So we got a lot of water yesterday. In fact, Boulder and Fort Collins both about doubled their year-to-date precipitation from this week's storm alone. So great, great news on that front. We really did need this moisture. Still getting a little bit here across northern Colorado. Not a ton that's reaching the ground, but some showers tonight and early tomorrow across the northeastern plains. A little rain in a few spots, but the general story, the big warm-up into next week with temperatures in the mid-80s on Monday. Mother's Day, isolated showers and storms both days this weekend. But if you got outdoor plans this weekend, keep them. It's going to be pretty nice out there with temperatures in the 70s and, again, 80s next week.
State legislators are down to the final days of this session with several major policies still up for debate, including a multi-million dollar Tabor refund and a big change to how some murder cases are prosecuted. Right now, even unintentional killings can be prosecuted as first-degree murder if they happen as a result of, quote, conduct that creates a grave risk with extreme indifference to the value of human life. A Democrat-backed bill would downgrade most of those so-called extreme indifference murder cases to second-degree murder if only one person was killed. Spokesperson for the governor told us today he does not support that bill as currently written. Veto. Legislators are still discussing whether the state can withhold $300 million in your Tabor refunds over the next two fiscal years to make up for an overpayment last year. State budget writers want to use that money to balance the budget. Not clear if that's legal, though. And there's a $700 million elephant in the room because lawmakers are still considering a proposal to try and head off a conservative-backed ballot initiative that would force the state to put hundreds of millions of dollars toward road construction. We're on veto watch for several other controversial bills waiting for the governor's decision. There's a bill similar to one he vetoed last year that would strengthen union bargaining power. And the governor's indicated he may veto a bill doing away with credit card swipe fees on the sales tax portion of transactions. That's getting major pushback from credit card companies and banks. The governor says he's still considering the impact of national regulations there. Looking for something to add to your reading list? I have a suggestion for you, a recommendation of some great local reporting that didn't come from our newsroom, but is worth your time. That's next. May I make a recommendation? It's journalism that is not from our team, but I think you'll find it worth reading. No surprise, it is Denbright, again, doing really thoughtful work that just stops you in your tracks. The latest from Kyle Harris and Kevin Beatty at Denbright tells the story of Suzanne McKinney, a woman who's been living in her bright yellow car in Denver for the past decade. It's the story of how the Washington Park neighborhood is divided over the best way to help her. As Denver struggles to reach people living on the streets who are service resistant, Denverite took the time to get to know one woman, her story, and the constellation of people who have been impacted by her homelessness. Even if you're not in the neighborhood or Denver at all, I think that you will appreciate this read. It is an in-depth and nuanced take on a complicated and difficult issue. You can find the full article linked on the Next social media pages or at 9news.com/next. Today marks 7 years since the shooting at STEM school Highlands Ranch. The names of the two shooters, now sentenced to life in prison, have faded from memory. Kendrick Castillo, the young hero who gave his life to save his classmates, he is who is remembered. Late last year, a memorial to Kendrick's heroism was unveiled outside his school. It honors his deep Christian faith, his love for his friends and his family, and his favorite hobbies, robotics and Jeeps. I should mention the Castillo family's deep appreciation to you. When we asked if you would fund the cost of that memorial with one of your weekly micro-giving campaigns, your donations paid for it within 90 minutes. Kendrick is remembered in other ways in our community. Each year, Strangecraft Brewing makes Kendrick's Ale. Kendrick's dad, John, is a home brewer friend of the owner there. Last year, a portion of the proceeds went to renaming the street in front of the school.
And we do it to, like I said, remember Kendrick. We've been donating portion of the proceeds since the first batch and helped John and Maria get Kendrick Castillo Way down in Highlands Ranch, which was amazing. Every time I drive down C-470 and see that.
The Castillo family's focus now is seeking canonization for Kendrick, a process that has started in the Catholic Church with gathering information about his life and his acts. We're back with your feedback next. Feedback via text, all caps. Don't want a ticket? Don't speed, idiots. Now, I think we're all agreed, right, that like speeding is dangerous. The question here is the way that these small towns up north are going about it and whether they want to truly reduce speeding or also just collect a bucket of cash. That's the reason why we've been looking at their warning systems versus just rolling it out and issuing thousands of tickets. Doug writes in to say, who gives a flying F about NCAR? This affects virtually nobody. Well, Doug, if you're watching the program tonight, you heard meteorologist Chris Bianchi explain in depth how gutting NCAR is going to drastically impact weather forecasting, which keeps everybody safe. Now, it's possible that you also have deep expertise on this issue and just chose not to include it. It's also possible that you were just a really angry dude on the internet. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News. Streaming live, same time, on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.